Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And today my guest is Megan Bradshaw. She is actually the government relations manager for the Center for Lyme Action. If you've been listening to me for any length of time, you know that I do a lot of advocating out in the Lyme community. And one of the things I do is I get the opportunity to meet with Congress each year to try to raise more awareness, more funding for all the different things, the research and everything to help all of us that are struggling through this battle. So I've connected with Megan over the last year because, like I said, she works for the Center for Lyme Action, but she also has her own personal journey, and wow, is it a journey, with Lyme disease. So I have not personally heard it, so I'm super excited that I get to listen along for the first time with you listeners. So Megan, thank you so, so much for joining me. I'm super excited to have you.
Tanya, thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here, and I'm excited to join the podcast. I've enjoyed your episodes that I've listened to.
Oh, awesome. Thank you so much. All right. So I'm going to let you take it away. Like, where do we start? How far back do we go? Yeah. Right. How do we know?
Yeah. So I think a place where I like to start is where I was diagnosed.
Okay.
And so, this was December of 2019. So I had been home for a few months, for what was supposed to be a very short medical leave. I was having a torn meniscus repaired. And then I knew that later that year, I was going to have bilateral hip replacement surgery. And I was 26 years old. Wow. So, I was home at my parents' house, and I had been I was bedridden. I couldn't move for 3 months leading up to this hip replacement surgery. And I was just in a terrible space. And I was, wondering what was my life going to look like? Cause all of a sudden I felt like it was ripped out from underneath me.
Did you have an accident that caused this hip replacement, or does it turn like kind of go back to the whole Lyme thing?
Yeah. So it kind of goes back to the whole Lyme thing. So I woke up from my hip replacement surgery, and I got an email that had test results from a functional medicine doctor who I had been working with for a couple of months, trying to figure out what had been wreaking havoc on my body for all these years. So I was under the belief that I had an autoimmune illness because I had been diagnosed originally with rheumatoid arthritis. And so I had been on immunosuppressive therapeutics for about 2.5 years. I was on steroids and low doses of chemo drugs, which I was giving myself injections of every week. And this accelerated the progress of my disease because I didn't realize I had these underlying active infections. And so I woke up from this surgery in December of 2019, and I had these test results, and it was like, finally, I was relieved because I knew what I was going up against and what I was actually dealing with. But I was also so angry, and I was so just flabbergasted. How was this missed? And so it confirmed that I had multiple tick-borne infections. And soon after,
you know, that's what so many of us go through is the misdiagnosis, right? And so now you're on all these medications that a lot of times can exacerbate the whole, all the pathogens that are running through our body. So that's crazy. So
I was really frustrated, and I was just thinking, how the heck did this happen? How was this misdiagnosed? How was this missed completely? And how was I on this wrong path? And, it was as I was starting treatment, I was referred to a Lyme literate, a medical provider, and I was recommended, the functional medicine doctor who I was working with really said, you know, there's nothing here that I can do for you, or nowhere at any other major medical institution is really going to be able to help you. What you need is long-term IV antibiotics based on how far your disease has progressed. And so I went to a Lyme doctor, and we started me in that January. We had a line placed in my chest, and I started on 10 months of IV antibiotics, paired with also oral antibiotics and herbs. So I was on a whole concoction of things. And mm-hmm. So as this was happening, I really started to wonder how this happened. I had really great access to healthcare. I was well educated. I had great insurance. I was seeing, you know, some of the best specialists at some of the best medical institutions across the country. And I wondered, how was it that I slipped through the cracks with all of that access? And then I wondered, if this is what's happened to me, what's happening to people who don't have that kind of access?
Yep. Exactly.
And so it started me on this path of really digging into understanding the complexity of this issue. So as I'm, you know, simultaneously having surgeries and recovering and going through this IV treatment, I am learning what a problem this is, and it's much larger than my own. And that's where I started getting dialed into patient advocacy. And that is really what helped me, because at this point I was just grieving this life that I had intended for myself. So for the years ahead of this happening, I had a great career with Nordstrom, and I had worked there for about 7 years, and they had moved me across the country and back a couple of times, and I loved it. And my dream was to work in the buying office, and that's where I thought I was headed. But all of a sudden I became really passionate about this issue that was obviously had uprooted my own life. And that's where I started getting plugged into things. And it was in October of 2020 that I was literally hooked up to my IV pole in my parents' living room. And I signed on to a virtual event that the Center for Lyme Action was hosting. And I heard Colonel Nicole Malachowski share her story. And her testimony was just incredibly compelling. And I felt like there was a call to action, and I wanted to answer it. And I saw that there was a way for me to get involved and to help make a difference here. And so that's where I really started channeling this energy that I had, and turning my pain into a purpose.
Yes, I love that. And it's interesting that you mentioned the word grief, right? Mm-hmm. You're grieving your past life, because mm-hmm. I talk about that a lot. Like, I really think it plays into our roles. So, you know, we're grieving the person that we used to be. Yeah. We're already grieving who we may end up being that we don't mm-hmm. know, right? And we grieve yeah. the loss of friends, relationships, yeah. financial burdens. Like, there's so much of that. And grieving alone is, you know, a roller coaster of a journey mm-hmm. for sure. And so is Lyme. So to mm-hmm. to have them both together, but they really just kind of go hand in hand.
They do. Yes. So there is certainly a lot of grief to be processed. And unfortunately, I went through the grief cycle over and over and over again, because it was during my time when I was doing IV treatment, I learned that surgery where I had two hip replacements, that wasn't going to be the end of it. I learned actually that I was going to need many replacements. And so over the course of the last, 4 or 5 years, I have now had 9 total joint replacements and 8 joints surgically fused. So,
oh years, my gosh. Now, wow. So yes. Is that because you went undiagnosed for so long mm-hmm. and Lyme just ate away yeah. your body?
So I think that the best way to describe it is that I had like the perfect storm of problems. So I have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, which is a connective tissue disorder, which I didn't learn that I had that until way too late. But then I also had these active infections, and I also had been on immunosuppressive drugs. So it was just the perfect storm to create my joints, to just disintegrate my joints. And so at that point, you know, I I was really frustrated. There was a lot of grief and I felt like I was just getting pummeled over and over. It was like, as soon as I thought that I was getting close to the finish line, it was like another thing was added and it was pushed further away. And so this went on for about 3 years, and every 3 months I was going through another major surgery. Unfortunately, with those kinds of surgeries, you can't really, you know, tack them all on together. And I begged, and I wanted to speed up the process so desperately. And I knew it was risky. I had some surgeons who would do bilateral, like I did my knees together and I did my hips together, but some of the others you really can't do together, just because of the risk involved and how complicated recovery would be. And right. So every 3 months I was going through, you know, having another major surgery and the recovery process, and slowly but surely just becoming the bionic woman. And so
that is just crazy, you know, and two, just the trauma of the surgery on your body, right? So
yeah.
I fully believe that if somebody is in remission from Lyme, right? Mm-hmm. A couple of the things that can really, you know, let Lyme rear its head again is mm-hmm. any type of emotional or physical trauma. So yeah. Here you are, you're trying to battle Lyme disease, but yet they're working against you every 3 months by putting this trauma on your body.
Yeah. So I luckily feel like what I call my killing spree, which is when I did the 10 months of IV antibiotics, I felt like that had been really aggressive. And I was really lucky that when I had to stop that treatment so that I could continue having these surgeries, because I was so immobile. I was in my parents' house. I was needing 24/7 care. At my worst, my functional level was comparable to someone with a spinal cord injury. I was unable to feed myself, to bathe myself, to you know, toilet independently. I needed help with literally everything. And for me, it was really challenging because my brain was still fully intact and I was aware of everything that was going on.
You almost kind of wish you weren't, right? Like, I wish I don't know what I was going through.
Sometimes, you know, I think about, I have like gaps in my memory from that period of time. And I think that that's, you know, it's a trauma response. It's because my brain is protecting me from all of the awful physical conditions that I was enduring. And of course, the emotional pain of it as well. And so, you know, as this continued and I was, you know, going through this process, I wasn't sure what my life was going to look like. So I didn't know how independent I'd ever be. I didn't know if I would ever be able to walk again. I didn't know if I would ever be able to, you know, sit myself upright, you know, from laying down. I didn't know if I would, you know, I didn't have the ability to even push my own wheelchair. So I wasn't sure what my life would look like. But what I knew is that my brain was still working and I still had this motivation. I wanted to use my lived experience for good. I felt that my story highlighted a lot of the challenges that other patients experience. It highlights the challenges with misdiagnosis. It highlights the challenges with having a delayed diagnosis, with not being believed, with just kind of suffering quietly. I know that for me, it was really challenging because it seemed like a lot of people in my life couldn't conceptualize how sick I really was until I was having joints replaced and a line put in my chest and I was using a wheelchair. But the truth is that I had been really sick for like almost a decade leading up to this. And it had
it's
just
that invisible illness, right? Mm-hmm. It's the invisible illness.
I'm as awful as that time was, I'm also really grateful for it because I think it made me, a more empathetic person. I think it made me a better advocate. My lived experience became drastically different. But I continued to be committed to figuring out how can I help my community. And so during this process, I actually decided that I wanted to return to school. And
okay. If I can just kind of pause right here for a second. So I wanted to see if maybe you can kind of elaborate a little bit more with us about, so here you are in your 20s, right? Like the prime of your life, and you don't know where you're going to go from here, right? So you have this diagnosis. It's not fantastic, but it's just like you said, every time you turn that corner or take a couple steps forward, it's like you're getting smacked back down, right? So, you know, that's one of the main reasons I do this podcast is because we all lose that hope.
Yeah, we do.
We're so desperate. We have nothing in life inspires us. And so I know that you said earlier, you know, you wanted to turn your pain into a purpose, which I absolutely love. But how are you feeling during this time? Like what got you through? Did you have any tips? Do you have any insight on that for us?
Well, there's a couple of things. One is having a good support system. I'm really grateful for the friendships that I've made within this community. I'm also really grateful for the friendships that had been strengthened with people who I had in my life previously. A lot of people who maybe I hadn't been so close with in the past who kind of surprised me and really showed up for me when I needed them the most. And
love that.
I'm very grateful for those people. I know I really benefited from virtual support groups like Generation Lime. That was really great because you're like in a room with people who get it and you don't have to overly explain yourself.
Because that validation is huge.
It is.
You know, just validating that, okay, to an outsider, the things I describe on a daily or a weekly basis, I get they kind of sound crazy. You know, one day this works fine. And then this day, this doesn't work fine. And unless you're in this community, it's really hard for people to kind of validate what you're saying.
Yeah. And you know, my mental health was really struggling. I don't know anybody who's experienced these illnesses and they haven't had mental health challenges. It's a daunting experience, especially when there's not a, you know, a clear roadmap of how do you improve your condition?
A clear roadmap. I don't even think there's a roadmap.
I don't even know if there's a roadmap. There's
right.
It's tough. It's hard to navigate. And, so my mental health was really, it was in a bad place. And, for me, I had to find an outlet. I'm a doer. I like to be productive. And that was where I decided I went back to school. And school became my outlet. And I know that I'm really fortunate to have had that opportunity to continue to pursue an education in the midst of all of this. But that was what I found as my outlet. I felt like it was something that was giving me this, like, it was like I could continue to push forward and put all my energy into this, because I felt like it was going to give me some tools that I could use to help my community. And I know that that may not be the choice that other patients have, or that may not be their outlet, but finding ways that you can still feel like yourself, and something that can, you know, just for me, like I love learning and I love also teaching. And so I loved teaching my peers and my professors about this issue. And I think that was a huge turning point for me, because to be honest, ahead of that, I had felt really lost. And it was getting involved with patient advocacy that made me start to feel like, after everything that had been taken from me, my independence, this life that I had created for myself, all of these things were just ripped out from underneath me. And I felt like I was starting to reclaim a little bit of that by starting to share my story and by starting to talk about what a problem this is and helping to make it so that other patients don't have to go down the same path that we've all walked.
Yeah. And so I tell people that when they're going through this journey, they're down and out, right? We all kind of reach that rock bottom, you know, and that's where a lot of times, unfortunately, suicide comes into play, right? Yeah. Because that's a lot with this. And mm-hmm. so what I tell people is they need to find a why. They need to find their mm-hmm. why. Why mm-hmm. do they want to get well? Why do they want to continue to yeah. fight and get answers? And, you know, a lot of times for, you know, a parent, it's because of their children or, you know, vice versa. But for you, it sounds like turning that pain into a purpose, right? That yeah. was your why. Like, if I have to right. go through this, then I am going to be determined to be able to learn and gather all of these resources and these tools to be able to give back and share to others, because we learn the hard way alone, right? Mm-hmm. And so now we turn that pain into a purpose. Like, we can't, yeah. I say it all the time. I'm like, I can't let 13 years just go in vain. Like, that's not no. okay. There's a reason I went through this journey. And like you said, many blessings have come out of this. And this is one of them, you know, that we have yeah. the opportunity and we're capable of giving back to the Lyme community and yeah. sharing our story and sharing resources. And it yeah. truly is such an amazing community yeah. for sure.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, now I'm in a position where I get to help other advocates to share their stories, and I get to help them to reclaim a little bit of what's been taken from them. And I think that that is just, for me, it's incredibly rewarding, because I remember how I felt, you know, all those years ago when I really started in this journey, I guess. And I remember how lost I was, and I remember just how daunting it seemed. And I remember how hopeless it was for a while. And so I'm grateful that I get to help to, you know, pave a better future so that maybe people don't have to experience the kind of hardship that we've experienced, and folks can feel less alone and isolated as they're going through this.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, I know that there's a lot of listeners out there right now that, you know, have maybe been along this journey for a few years mm-hmm. and they really feel like nothing's changing, you know, yeah. nothing's getting better. And I can tell you, you know, when I mm-hmm. got sick in 08 and then my diagnosis in 2015, we have come so far. We yes. still have so much further to go, yes. but we really have. So just being able to be part of and experience, you know, mm-hmm. those movements that we're making yeah. within this community, within the government, within the CDC, yeah. you know, all the places that makes a difference. Mm-hmm. And so don't lose hope out there, because I promise there's a lot of us out there, you know, rooting yeah. for you underdogs that are still battling the fight, and we are making changes.
I like to tell people that, you know, I'm really lucky that in this role, I get to see a lot of the things that are happening and the people who are working on this relentlessly. And yeah. the right things are being put in place to get us the change that we hope to see. And unfortunately, these things take some time. They don't happen overnight, but we're seeing that through persistent advocacy, from patients sharing their stories, from their families and supporters sharing, you know, from the caregiver perspective, from their healthcare providers advocating. They're seeing what, you know, talking about what they're seeing in the community, the challenges that they're seeing their patients facing. We are helping to move it forward. And so that's where I love the Center for Lyme Action, because we make this opportunity for patients to be agents of change. And we equip you with all the tools so that you can participate and you can feel really confident in doing so. And, you know, I like to just reiterate too, I started with no experience in this. I was an advocate. I joined as a volunteer. And after
we didn't choose this life, right?
Yeah.
It chose us.
Yes. But, you know, as I got into this every year, I was finding more ways to get involved with the organization. And now I'm really grateful that it's become my full-time job. And, I'm very lucky that, you know, my recovery has been, it's been truly nothing short of miraculous. The life I enjoy today is a testament that good access to healthcare has the power to transform lives. You know, 2 years ago, I started walking again. I moved out of my parents' house. I started living independently. And it's like, I explain it to people like I was a toddler all over again in my late 20s, learning how to tie my shoes and dress myself and do all of these things that we very much take for granted when we are not, limited in mobility or experiencing life with a disability. And so I had to do all those things all over again. And now I am every month on the Hill in Washington, D.C. I'm there for about a week, running around the halls of Congress and talking about tick-borne diseases. And I'm grateful that I get to do that. I am very grateful that I get to experience sore feet and blisters again. These are the things that I didn't really miss, but the fact that I can is just really powerful. And I'm grateful that I get to do this work, and I will do it for as long as I can, because I want to see my friends, the people who I care about so much in this community. I want to make sure that they all have the resources that they need so that they can also enjoy a better quality of life too. And so that's where I'm so committed to this, is because of the relationships that I've made in this community. And it's people like you, Tanya, and like, you know, so many of the advocates that we get to meet. It's inspiring to see when people show up and they want to talk about the worst parts of their life so that someone else doesn't have to experience that too. It's really powerful.
Yeah, it really is, you know, and I just, you know, I got tears in my eyes when you're telling me you're running around, you know, you got your life back. And you truly did. It's like you have a second opportunity to start over, right? And not many of us get that. And so we can in turn as look at that as a blessing, right? Like maybe your path was going to be the wrong way. We don't know. We don't know why we go down the journeys that we do. But the outcome, the other side of Lyme can truly be so amazing. And so many blessings can come from it. And you know, one of my biggest ones is, you know, meeting new friends like you, Megan, and just the people that we never would have met. Yes. Right. And like you said, you became more empathetic, right? We kind of just do when we go through this journey, because we go through so many things. Yeah. And then the things that we think we don't take for granted, we really kind of do, you know, when we stop and realize that we can't do those things. We're like, well, gosh, you know, I used to want to shut the window if the birds were chirping too loud, right? Mm-hmm. Like, no, stop. Oh my gosh. Just allow me to walk outside and be able to hear the birds chirping, you know, and it sounds silly, but it really is true.
It changes your perspective. I am grateful when I have to park in the back of the parking lot at Trader Joe's and walk all the way in. I am grateful I can do that. Like, things that should be a minor inconvenience and maybe frustrating, I now look at as like, I'm so glad I get to experience these things again, because I didn't know if I ever would. And, you know, I will say some of them I don't miss as like, I guess I could live without, you know, cleaning the toilet or like other house chores that none of us really love doing, but
that's kind of like when I say, you know, for many years, and I'm sure I'm not alone in saying this, that I truly had a love-hate relationship with God, right? Like I was angry with him. Mm-hmm. But the other side of it is that just like what you said, all the things that we get to experience and do and not, if I can say anything, it's the fact that, okay, I love the journey I went through, right? But did it really have to be quite that painful? Could it have been a little, I would have been okay if it was a little bit less painful, but nonetheless, we gain so much from the journeys that we go through. And I know that, you know, there's probably someone listening to this, you know, that just says, no, what good can come from this? Yeah, and time and time again, I have guests on here that say the same thing. So we're probably right, right? Like everybody that has conquered Lyme is, they found so many blessings in it. So I know it is hard to grasp that could even be possible wherever you are in your journey, but I promise, right, that it really is.
Yeah. I know, you know, there are a lot of things too that make it exceptionally challenging for some patients to move through this process. And I think it's important to acknowledge those things too. And that's where I recognize, and that was a big part of my motivation, is like realizing that it was a privilege that I had the kind of access to healthcare that I had and the safety net that I had. And I talk about this candidly when I'm meeting with members of Congress, because I need them to know that this unfortunately isn't always the case for patients. And that's where patients are left sometimes in those desperate situations, and they're in just complete despair. And that is one of the hardest things about this, is knowing that there are many patients who will choose to end their suffering. And so I think it's also important to acknowledge that your suffering is real and valid. And it is so important to know that there are great resources that are available too, that can help with your mental health and help with making sure that you feel that you have a community and support and help you navigate this. Also knowing too that there are so many great organizations in our community who are putting in great work and do things that help patients, whether it's treatment grants, whether it's providing peer support, helping you locate doctors. There's lots of different things that exist. And that's why I also created my website, is so that patients can have a landing page to know what things are there that they can utilize, because this is something that is so challenging to navigate. But I am really grateful for the people and the organizations in our community that are trying to make this better for patients. And I know that we will see a day where the standard of care is a 180 from where it is right now. Yes. And that patients won't experience the barriers that exist. We know that there are significant financial barriers, there's geographical barriers. You know, it's challenging for people to travel and find a good doctor. And we're working towards a world in which you can find the care that you need right in your community and you can access it. And hopefully there will be lots of options that are available that doctors can use as tools to help you to get well. But we're working hard on that. And if you're interested in also working on that, that's where we have our fly-in. And as we mentioned, that's a great way for patients to advocate to their members of Congress, and they want to hear from you. You know, their job is supporting you. You are their constituent. And so if you can show up and tell them and be candid, what does life look like? You know, what are those things that make it difficult for you to access your care? And what are, you know, what are the things that you've experienced? Has it been a delayed diagnosis or misdiagnosis? Is it medical gaslighting? You know, are there things that their office can support you on? I've heard from countless advocates who say that they've developed relationships with the folks that they meet with, and then they find out of resources that their member of Congress can help them with getting, so that they can hopefully have a better patient outcome. So their job is to listen and to care. And the conversation has totally changed. I think, Tanya, you've done this for a couple of years, and you know that it's no longer like, what's the problem? It's, we know this is a problem. How can we help?
Because our voices are being heard, right?
Totally.
I mean, I remember 4 years ago, we would get them on the Zoom during our fly-in, and they're like, Lyme disease? You know, like, what is that?
Yeah.
And everybody knows what it is now, you know, and I love it when they ask questions. I'm like, you know, I'm a talker anyways. And so I want them to ask questions and I want to be able to educate them more on it. And they really do seem to, you know, be turning that corner for sure.
Yes.
And so, you know, when we were talking earlier about finding our why in our journey, right? Like, we need to find a why. We need to find something that we're passionate about, whether it's family, a loved one, whatever it may be. It truly is what is going to push you forward through this journey. And if you're thinking you're alone, first of all, please don't think you're alone. This community is amazing. There is always somebody there that wants to lend a hand or lend an ear. Mm-hmm. So reach out to me, reach out to Megan, let us connect you, with people and the resources. But you know what? Maybe this is your why. right? Yeah. So like, as you mentioned, we've got the Lyme fly-in that is in February of every year. And just so you guys are, you know, and if you are a regular listener, a couple of months ago, I had one of the co-founders of this organization, Bonnie Crater, on my show to talk all about exactly what it is. But it is a wide range, right? If you want to come and share your voice, we have a spot for you. If you want to come and just sit in silence, we have a spot for you. If you want to come sit in silence and not even have your camera on the Zoom, we have a spot for you. Just whatever your level of comfortability is, we've got a spot for you. It's just, we want to come in numbers.
Yes. Numbers are so important. And in the past, we've had advocates from about 47 states, which is amazing. So we're striving for all 50. You know, the more advocates that we have, it's power in numbers. They see that there are so many people in their communities that are affected. And, you know, if you're not well enough to, we have team leads who work with advocates who maybe are like, I'm in the middle of treatment. It's really hard for me to communicate or maybe it's hard for me to listen or look at the screen or, you know, whatever it may be. And you can share with them. You can write your story and your team lead is happy to share that on your behalf. We try to make it so that people can participate in a way that is most comfortable for them and it's accessible. So again, everything's on Zoom. So we're not asking everyone to come to Capitol Hill. I know how tiring that is. I know that our crew, definitely, we would not do so well out there. We would all need to take a couple of rests and... and so we do this on Zoom so that everyone can participate. So if you are, you know, laid up on the couch, or if you're in bed, wherever, please join. And it is really powerful too, I think, for them to get a glimpse into what everyday life looks like for a patient. So I've seen many patients who show up and they've got their IV line hooked up in a meeting, you know, or they're in their doctor's office. And
We want them to see
candidly what is life like for our community. But again, the conversation's totally changed. We have a lot of support. I tell you, almost every single office that I connect with, either the member of Congress themselves or one of their staffers, either they themselves have a tick-borne illness or a history with a tick-borne illness, or they have an immediate family member. And so there's always somebody who gets it. And so there are a lot of people who are in our corner. And so when you show up as their constituent and you say, this is really important, this is affecting my life, it's going to be higher on their priority list. And the idea is that we want to get this really high on everyone's priority list. We've got a big lift next year. We're working on some big pieces of legislation. I can't really talk about now, but we're really encouraged by what we hope will happen. But again, just the power of the patient, it's so important to show up. And if you're not somebody who is comfortable with joining meetings or talking, or even if, you know, you're not up for being a silent supporter, or maybe you have scheduling conflicts, if you're working, or maybe you have an appointment on the day of our meetings, there are lots of other ways that we can use your help. So if you're interested in getting involved and you want to do some help with us or some work with us volunteering behind the scenes, please reach out and I'd love to get you plugged in. We're also going to be hosting an informational webinar sometime in December. So be on the lookout for that, because we're going to just give some info about the different ways that you can help and do some Q&A, because we know that there's a lot of questions from patients about what participation looks like. And when people have limited capacity, they want to make sure that they're signing up for something that they're actually able to participate in, which I totally understand. I was so apprehensive the first year too. I was like, I don't know if I can do this. Like,
it was scary.
Yeah. But, just know that you are going to be set up with a group of people who were all unfortunately in this boat and, but they're there to help you, guide you through this experience. And we want to make it something that you feel really confident, you know, going into and walking out of, knowing that you're making a difference. And so We hope that we'll have some new advocates this year. We have a couple hundred, and we actually have one of the highest turnouts of Hill Days, or what they're called, where, you know, patient advocacy groups organize meetings with their members of Congress. But I know that we certainly have a lot more people who have not been involved. And I think that we can certainly capture some new advocates this year. And I hope that we can continue to grow. And maybe we can have the biggest Hill Day, virtually, yes. Of course, but
yes, that's what I'm looking forward to. So we are going to put the link in the description of this. If you just want to click on the centerforlymeaction.org and just see what it's all about, no commitment, right? Log in, sign up to get the information. Again, we're always looking for new advocates for all the states. And if you are yourself in Idaho, I'm the Idaho team lead. So send me a message, LymanBeyondWithTanya@gmail.com. I will get you plugged in. Whatever we need to do, we just need to come in droves, right? Because we are making many changes. And like you just described, Megan, so many of them are behind closed doors, right? Behind the scenes, yeah, that many don't see. So join us. Yes. Take a look at what love we're doing and the changes that we're trying to make for all of our sakes, right? Yes. So we will have that information in the description. And then also you mentioned a resource page. So you can go to meganbradshaw.com. She has got tons of information for any type of resource that you're looking for. Again, we'll have that site in the description of this episode as well.
Awesome.
Megan, thank you so, so much. And I'm just so happy and thankful that you have your life back, right?
Thank you.
You have a second chance and you've turned it into just the best mission possible, I think, because being able to give back to this community at this capacity, it really truly is filling our hearts and souls. And I know that that's why you do it. And that's why I do what I do.
I know. I'm very passionate about this. And like I said, I will do it for as long as I can. And it is truly, it's the greatest honor to be able to be the Lyme lobbyist is kind of what I'm getting my rep.
I love it.
But I am going to continue on this mission. And I hope that some of the folks who are listening are going to be joining us in this fight. So hopefully we'll see you in February at our fly-in.
Yes, absolutely. I love it. And thank you again for joining me and just sharing your story and, you know, just giving that hope. If, you know, you were in a wheelchair, you couldn't feed yourself. You heard it, you guys. It doesn't matter where you are in your journey. There's always hope. Don't lose that. Find your why and keep fighting because you can do this. Thank you so much, Megan.
Thank you.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.